It's 7:44 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Xander Alloy. There's more and more conversation about what a transition away from a coal-heavy economy might look like in the state, but it's a hard reality to swallow.
But I think what we're going to need to really help communities as this industry shrinks further is an order of magnitude more resources.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Xander Alloy. As the nation grapples with climate change, there is a related challenge. The need for a just transition for coal-impacted communities. It's an idea gaining traction with some 2020 Democratic presidential hopefuls.
You know, we're not going to forget the workers either. The workers who, through dangerous and backbreaking labor, powered our industrial rise.
It's about a new deal for people who work. It's about justice for people whose communities have been destroyed.
So we need a just transition to protect them and make sure that they have new jobs, they have the education, they have the health care, and everything else they need to get their feet on the ground.
We heard there from Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and former Vice President Joe Biden all supporting a just transition. But just what does that mean? In coal-heavy West Virginia, discussions are starting to get attention in the state's capital. Brittany Patterson reports.
On a recent Wednesday evening, it's rainy and cold, but inside a conference room at the Charleston Convention Center, it's standing room only. People have packed the place to talk about an idea that is gaining traction, a just transition for Appalachia's coal communities as their main industry continues to decline.
When you're hearing for a call for a just transition for coal-reliant communities, folks are saying, look, starting now and into the future, we're going to decarbonize the economy.
Annie Eisenberg is a law professor at the University of South Carolina. She was one of a handful of experts who spoke at the event in West Virginia's capital city.
There will be disproportionate losses imposed on coal-reliant communities, and that's unfair. So we're going to offset the losses. And that is where I think this is a good thing, and it's also tricky.
Tricky for a few reasons, says Adele Morris with the nonpartisan Brookings Institution. Coal companies often shed healthcare, pension, and environmental cleanup obligations during bankruptcy. Then there's the impact the loss of the industry has on communities.
I've called it the death spiral of a community.
Morris is an economist and one of the country's leading experts on coal community transition. She says when a mine or coal-fired power plant closes, it takes a huge toll on the local economy, not just in lost jobs, but lost tax revenue, at a time when the community needs more help.
This is the trap that is so important to avoid, because once you start down that fiscal spiral, it is super hard to get out.
That's the kind of economic shock many warn could come with aggressive action on climate change. But here's the thing. Across the Ohio Valley and the country, coal is already losing ground. The energy shift is underway, but without the part that would help communities make the transition. Federal data show since 2009, mining employment and coal production have fallen by about 50% in the Ohio Valley. But for lawmakers that represent coal-producing places like West Virginia, it can be very hard to acknowledge those facts, at least in public. But West Virginia Delegate Evan Hansen says that may be changing.
But I would say privately, many legislators of both parties acknowledge that there is a transition going on and that this is one of the most important issues that we need to deal with as a legislature.
Hansen, a Democrat, has introduced a bill that would create a new state office to take the lead in helping coal country communities. It would help local governments plan and hopefully lure more public and private investment. The bill has bipartisan support and the backing of the United Mine Workers, but not everyone is a fan.
Sounds to me like that they think it would be much better if it were something other than the coal mine. And that bothers me a whole lot because we got the best coal miners in the world.
Bill Rainey is the head of the West Virginia Coal Association. The lobbying group this session is pushing a bill that would require West Virginia coal plants to burn the same amount of coal they did in 2019 and the years ahead, regardless of what makes most economic sense. even amongst those who support a just transition, big questions remain on how best to do it. Chuck Fluharty ran the Shaping Our Appalachian Region, or SOAR program, a community-centered just transition model in eastern Kentucky.
But the real proof of the pudding is in how broad that collective commitment is, and is it there for the money, or is it there for the future? How much it is about investing and not simply dropping dollars on the table.
Morris with the Brookings Institution says today, most economic transition work in the region comes from federal programs like the Appalachian Regional Commission.
But I think what we're going to need to really help communities as this industry shrinks further is an order of magnitude more resources.
Her estimates come in at tens of billions of dollars over the next decade and would require some kind of regulatory leadership from Washington, D.C., preferably a carbon tax. Democratic candidates have offered differing ideas. Some, like Cecil Roberts, head of the United Mine Workers of America, say the political lift may be too steep for Congress. Here he is speaking last fall at the press club in Washington, D.C.
We want our health care plans saved, and if you can't do that, and it's been 10 years, how do you think we're going to believe that you're going to be able to give us a just transition from the coal industry to some other employment?
And then there's the question of how should the money be spent? Morris says that will take some thought as well.
I'm still struggling with exactly how you do that in a way that gets those resources out, but does it in a way that gives people comfort that it's responsibly allocated.
But she says if a state like West Virginia does invest in dedicated planning for the ongoing transition, the sooner the better. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Charleston, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:51. I'm Xander Alloy. Partly sunny skies today with high temperatures in the 40s and 50s. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a chance of rain showers, lows in the 30s and 40s. Rainy and windy tomorrow, highs in the 40s and 50s. Cloudy skies tomorrow night with a chance of rain or snow showers, lows in the 20s and 30s. On a recent episode of the Legislature Today, Roxy Todd spoke with West Virginia Agricultural Commissioner Ken Leonhart and Senator Dave Sippelt, chairman of the Senate Agriculture and Rural Development Committee, about ways the West Virginia Legislature can help farmers succeed. Here's an excerpt from the interview, taped live from the Capitol.
Are there things that lawmakers here in West Virginia could do that could help struggling small farmers across the state? Commissioner, we'll start with you.
Well, obviously, yes, there are some things that we can do. And, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about is how do we get the small farmer access to capital to even start a small farm or change the mode of operation of what they're doing?
Something like purchasing
land or equipment, just access to capital, because they have to write a business plan and a bank wants to know that they're going to make money before they'll lend the money to get started. The other thing that we're doing, and we've done some of the things with the help of the legislature, we've done things like a cottage food bill and the Fresh Food Act, so we just need to make sure that we get the cooperation of all agencies within the state working together. And right now before the legislature are the rules for that Fresh Food Act so that we can make that a successful operation. The other thing that we've done is the West Virginia Grown Program, getting to highlight those products that we are grown right here or produced right here in West Virginia at a value added so that the small farms can be prosperous. So there's things that we're doing. We're working with the legislature. I think we've come a long way in the last couple of years to help, but we've got a long way to go.
One thing I've heard from some farmers who sell to school systems is that they want a certain price that is really tough for small farmers. Is that something you all are looking at, is trying to ensure that schools and other state institutions ensure a competitive price to farmers? Senator Seipelt?
Of course, they have a budget to meet also, and we understand the challenges of that. And many times The schools want to provide a meal which is inexpensive and easy to prepare, and sometimes fresh produce is more difficult to prepare. One thing that we've done throughout the state is stood up, and it's more in the community level. I know the Preston County has done this, but in an aggregation center where many of the local farmers can bring their produce in, have it washed, and have it prepared and ready for market.
So that, right in the classroom.
Well, no, actually it's in the Preston workshop, and in fact then it's distributed from that point to the schools which are willing to buy.
Interesting.
You have to get the buy-in from the local school system, and once the local school system buys into the program, then we find a little bit more success. But we're out there talking to those school systems, trying to show them the benefit that they'll have on down the road with the children eating from a, you know, locally sourced, a healthy food supply. There's so many different issues. If we get our children on the right path of a healthy diet, we can save money down the road on health care and things of that nature. So, you know, it's like anything, it's a business. And, you know, people have, you know, you're part of a competitive society, and you have to produce a better product at a better price sometimes. And that's the struggle that the farmers have in West Virginia.
I mean, big picture, I think a lot of people don't think, I myself don't think about where our food comes from very often. I just sort of take it and buy it, and it's great. We can go to the grocery store. Are there a lot of these challenges that small farmers in West Virginia face that are sort of out of, I don't know, our control? Like, our food system's really complicated.
I think that some of the challenges that we face in our state and in our nation is that there's quite a bit of food which is sourced in other countries, you know, places where they can produce cheaper than we can because of the cost of living more than anything else. And I suppose as long as the quality and safety is comparable to our country, it's hard to say no to that. And quite frankly, we always have bargain shoppers. People are always looking to save a dollar here and there. But I will say that the market will drive, you know, the producers, and there's been a motion in the last 5 to 7 years probably to buy locally. And we see those posters around, you know, buy locally, support your local farmers. And I think that we're doing some of that, and we've revolutionized the way farmers markets are run in West Virginia, and I think is a step in the right direction.
That was Senator Dave Sippel, chairman of the Senate Agriculture and Rural Development Committee, and Ken Leonhardt, commissioner of agriculture, speaking with Roxy Todd on the legislature today. To hear the full interview, visit our website, wvpublic.org, and tune in every weeknight at 6 o'clock on West Virginia Public Broadcasting to hear the latest episode of The Legislature Today. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Xander Alloy.